coming up on New York Now.
She has, in the past year or so, not been as critical, I don't think, of Donald Trump. She's been walking that tightrope since Trump was elected.
We travel to the North Country to talk with Mountain Lake PBS journalist Tom Halleck.
Some of these trails in the high peaks, you know, 8 to 10 times the number of hikers they had 20 years ago. It has just exploded. That's great for the Adirondacks to have that many visitors coming, but it's obviously a problem to have that many trying to use the trails at the same time.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. The gang's all here one last time. More on that later in the program. I'm Matt Ryan.
I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
I'm Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio.
All right, and we're beginning at the Reporters Roundtable, an intimate setting to talk about the week's news. One big development in what was, I think, fair to say, a fairly quiet week was the release at last of the report from the state's Census Commission recommending how New York can get to a complete count. The report was, to put it lightly, delayed by, I believe, about 10 months.
Yeah, about 9 months overdue. It was supposed to happen in January of this year, but the commission was not even appointed until January. It was a good report laying out the problems that they face, the so-called hard-to-count populations, African Americans, Latinx, upstate rural who may lack internet, because all this can be done online this year. Elderly people who may not be able to do it online. But it was kind of short on exactly how they're going to get this all done. Some of the counting starts January of 2020, and they don't have that plan in place of how they're going to have, you know, the people actually carrying all this out. Granted, a lot of it is the federal government doing that, and the feds still have to hire 40,000 census workers. But it just seems like too little, too late, and that's what the immigrants' rights groups are saying, because they hope to be involved, you know, in the community getting people counted.
What's the explanation from the Cuomo administration? I mean, 10 months is an awfully long time.
The explanations have been fairly lame, I think it's fair to say. There's really no excuse for the fact that it took so long to even name the commission.
Well, I talked to Jim Alatras, who's the head of the commission, this week. He said, there's plenty of time. What are you talking about? He's like, we need to do a marketing campaign, but, you know, people don't pay attention to that early, so it'll be appropriate to start it in January. And he seemed very relaxed about the whole thing, saying, don't worry about it. We'll get it done.
It's very similar to sort of the appointment of these commissions that the governor expresses a lot of concern about but doesn't really take a lot of action on. We saw the same thing with the Constitutional Convention, where he kept pushing for more education, but kept kind of slow rolling funding and the appointment of a commission.
Okay, but there's a lot at stake here.
Yeah, well,
New York
and explain that. Lay that out. We're talking about federal funding.
Yeah, billions of dollars in federal funding for Medicaid, food stamps, money we get from the federal government, and then congressional seats. New York already stands to probably lose 2 seats. You don't want to lose any more seats. So it's really important that the people be counted, and some of the immigration rights groups are questioning why the governor hasn't moved faster on that.
And you better believe that members of Congress will be paying close attention to that. Losing 2 seats, then it becomes a battle. Okay, which two are we going to draw out? So that's going to be a whole big hassle come 2021.
The immigrants' rights groups also say that many of the proposals seem to give the governor extensive control over the purse strings of this money.
And a lot of these same groups supported Cynthia Nixon in the primary. Governor Andrew Cuomo had a Democratic primary. A lot of them are allied with the Democratic left, so they're feeling suspicious that that's why they're being left out. Although, once again, I talked to the governor's office and they said, no, that's just crazy. That's not happening. We really want everybody to be counted. But I just think there's just such, you know, there's so much room for error in the way this thing's going right now that they've got to really hurry up and get it done.
The governor on Tuesday announced the sad news that New York has suffered its first death due to the mysterious vaping ailments that have been kind of sweeping the nation. Dozens have died, and New York had its first fatality, according to the governor, a 17-year-old who lives in the Bronx.
That's right. Was hospitalized a couple of times in September, died October 4th, once again, one of, you know, 1,000 people now who have been sickened nationwide, and they're still really not able to pinpoint the cause, though they, so far it's linked to black market cannabis products. But still, it's just getting people very uneasy over vaping, because there's also a theory, what if it's the implements used for vaping? Mm. So it's not the, the nicotine per se, because that hasn't been linked, but it's something about the way these, you know, vaping, whatever the things are that you use, the cartridges are made. So it is, you know, becoming a deep concern.
And as Casey, you mentioned, you know, the governor said it was the first death, but that wasn't confirmed, right?
The city said we're still looking into it.
So I don't, where he's getting this information from, but you think when that happens, there would be a consensus among everybody.
There were also legal developments. The ban on flavored vaping products is now subject to a temporary restraining order. There are going to be there's a question of a temporary injunction, which would be more serious, coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it looks like the Department of Health is not going ahead right now with the emergency ban on menthol-flavored products, waiting to see how the court case plays out. I don't know if that means they think that they have a chance of losing. They're not saying that, but it seems like they want to wait and see what happens with the flavored vaping ban.
Also, last week we discussed the fact that we were coming up on the one-year anniversary of the Schoharie limo crash, a terrible calamity. 20 people died. It was an issue much debated in the last legislative session, although virtually no legislation was passed because the Senate and the Assembly could not get their respective ducks in a row. This week, my paper, The Times Union, reported that a letter that was sent from the Schoharie County District Attorney, which has brought charges against the operator of that limo company, revealed that Mavis Tire, a store up in Saratoga Springs where this limo was inspected and allegedly got work done, that in fact a manager, former manager at that store, told investigators that in fact much of that work that the limo company was apparently billed for was not done, including on the brake system.
Yeah, that they said that they fixed the brakes and they didn't. If that's true, I mean, that is appalling. And you wonder what other drivers took their cars there, didn't get their brakes fixed. I'm sure the investigators can find out. They can subpoena the records and they can get to the bottom of this. But yeah, if true, that is just another shocking development and this really horrible, tragic story where just so many things went wrong.
It also goes to the question of state oversight, because this, this Mavis Tire outlet provided a DMV sticker to this stretched limo involved in the crash, which it should not have received. It was subject to much stricter Department of Transportation kind of bus inspections. The fact that it got the sticker at this Mavis raises the question of whether the state DMV is actually doing anything in the case of real enforcement over this type of work.
Yes, a lot more to come out on this, I think.
All right, well, let's take a look at this week's New York Now poll question, something we'll talk about later in the show. Do you think impeachment proceedings will help or hurt Democrats in November of 2020? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week we asked, will you participate in early voting this year? It begins October 26th. Laura Bierman of the League of Women Voters was our guest last week with Karen, and the majority said no, 60%. Barb in Queens, a longtime viewer of ours. Barb, thanks for watching all these years. She said, I have plans for Election Day, and this reduces the 6 a.m. run to the polls. The early location and hours are so convenient, why not? Peter in Schenectady, watching on WMHT TV, told us, I've been voting for 55 years and have voted on Election Day with no issues. Early voting is a waste of time and taxpayer money. And finally, Arlene in Canteen, watching on WPBS out of Watertown, said it may allow more people to participate in democracy. Our thanks to all those who responded. You can do so this week by heading to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS.
You'll also find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog. You can also get there by going to timesunion.com.
All right, we always choose this time of year to make the trek up the Northway to Mountain Lake PBS in Plattsburgh, where we discuss the most pressing political and environmental issues with Tom Halleck. He's the longtime Champlain Valley journalist and producer and host of Mountain Lake Journal. Tom, great to be with you again here at Mountain Lake PBS for our annual conversation. We'll start things off with politics, right? North Country politics. Elise Stefanik has been the representative up here since 2014 when she was elected, the youngest ever at that time, age 30. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat that mark in 2018.
Have we noticed, I've noticed at least a shift in her public appearances. She was at the Albany GOP annual conference. She was talking a lot about a lot of red meat topics for conservatives. They were really criticizing AOC, Bill de Blasio, Andrew Cuomo, even Kirsten Gillibrand, who of course was a representative up here for a few years. Has she shifted more right, can you tell, in 2019?
I think perhaps, but she also at events like that will do that. She'll be more bold and outspoken at events like that.
And that is a different event, in all fairness, than a regular appearance.
Other events play up her bipartisanship. She has, in the past year or so, not been as critical, I don't think, of Donald Trump. She's been walking that tightrope since Trump was elected. I think her criticisms of Trump, her criticisms of Trump, have been less frequent than they were when she first got elected.
We've seen her, she's called for Adam Schiff to step down, who, of course, is the head of the Intelligence Committee in Congress. She almost acts like, in a way, and I find this a little curious, she's a marginal member of Congress, but she's not. She's a solid pick here in the North Country. In the blue wave of 2018, where folks in Staten Island saw a Democrat get elected, other places around the country, for the first time in years and years, she beat Tedra Cobb, her opponent, in 2018 by 14 points.
She did.
So she has got a strong base up here. So I guess why I'm a little surprised she isn't more outspoken, maybe in support of Donald Trump.
And I think that has always been the question a lot of people have had, that you really don't seem to have a race, you don't seem to have a worry. Tedra Cobb was the closest that anyone had come to defeating her, but still, I think a lot of people are a little surprised. They don't think she has a big re-election threat, and so they often will ask why she is apparently so cautious.
It also goes with, she's gotten some criticism from the Post Star, the paper down in Glens Falls, for not being accessible enough. I know some reporters on Twitter up here in the North Country have said that as well. She has these Coffee with Your Congresswoman events. In fact, she has four this week that we're talking. All of them are during the work day, I should say, between 9 and 5, where, of course, a lot of people can't attend these.
That's always been a criticism right from the get-go when Trump was elected, and a number of the Republicans avoided having large town hall meetings in big venues that a lot of people could attend. She was one of the congresspeople who chose to go for the smaller gatherings where you would have 20, 50 people at one time. But since the get-go, those have been scheduled, as you mentioned, during weekdays and at hours that a lot of people find inconvenient. And they've demanded, why not hold these in the evening or weekends when other people can come? But so far, she's pretty much stuck to the schedule.
We'll see if that changes in 2020. And it looks like Tedra Cobb, that's going to be the rematch?
It appears at this point. No other Democrats have come forward. Tedra Cobb is in the race. She announced several months ago she's raising money, so it looks like
Decent fundraising numbers,
lagging behind what Stefanik has been able to raise. Stefanik's at about $1.5 million. Cobb's at about $500,000. Mm-hmm. Third quarter, Stefanik raised $450,000, Cobb $250,000. So she's trailing in the fundraising at this point. But it appears at this point that she's going to be the only challenger. Well, there may be a Green Party candidate again.
Which there usually is up here.
Usually is, but we haven't heard of anyone from the Green Party getting in the race. As far as Democrats, it looks like Tedra Cobb.
All right, we look forward to seeing what happens in 2020 in that race. Another issue we've highlighted on New York Now, and I know that you have highlighted on Mountain Lake Journal, is the overcrowding issue in the High Peaks.
It's huge.
Governor Cuomo and his administration has really promoted the Adirondacks, you know, arguably as much as any of his predecessors. But the video you've seen this summer, if you follow social media on Twitter or Facebook, you are seeing cars bumper to bumper along Route 73, along some of the popular hikes, Cascade Mountain, Giant Mountain, and so many others. This has really become an issue that it's really getting hard to overlook now.
It has, and just in the past week, people have been posting video, and some have said it's the most crowded they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these trails in the High Peaks, you know, 8 to 10 times the number of hikers they had 20 years ago. Yeah. It has just exploded. That's great for the Adirondacks to have that many visitors coming, but it's obviously a problem to have that many trying to use the trails at the same time. So DEC stepped in. They've been trying to find solutions to this. They implemented a parking ban, no parking along State Route 73, no parking allowed anywhere other than within the designated parking lots. People are ignoring that. They're getting ticketed. The state's providing shuttle buses. They're hoping to try to convince people, especially on busy weekends, go to another area of the Adirondack Park, go to different high peaks. Mm-hmm. Don't make it worse. You know it's going to be crowded these weekends in the fall on Columbus Day.
Sure.
And so they're hopeful that those steps will help, but so far it's a real problem that doesn't seem to have an end in sight.
And you wonder if we're going to reach the point where maybe there will be permits.
There's
at
been
some
talk
point.
Of
That's
that.
Been floated by a
that
few people.
That has been, and used in the Catskills, used in other states, and I think a number of people are now saying that may be the step they have to take here.
It's always that balance in the Adirondacks, isn't it?
It is.
Economic dollars and then
and which is so critical, and so they want to be careful how they do this. They don't want to chase away the hikers, but at the same time, they're just overwhelmed.
Right. Sticking with environmental issues, the Adirondack Council expressed concern recently about the possible return of acid rain, blaming it on the Trump administration's push for more coal.
Yep, in the rollback of regulations, they say in the past 2 years, they've actually seen data now from the EPA that shows that these coal-fired power plants are releasing more emissions, more sulfur dioxide combined. That is now coming to the Adirondacks. So they say it is happening now. Over the past 2 years, they've seen an increase in the amount of acid rain, which they say is bad news because over 30, 40 years, they've made such progress in fighting the acid rain that was such a huge problem. Now they're worried that they could see a setback.
A lot of the groups, the green groups, also talking about climate change and how that is impacting the park in the North Country up here. What are some examples they're citing?
A tick population.
Yeah.
Ticks have been around New York for decades and for generations, but they haven't reached into the higher elevations and the high peaks until just within the past few years. They believe that's because of climate change and the warmer temperatures, and now hikers are encountering ticks and all the problems that go with them, Lyme disease and other diseases that they carry. Just the numbers have exploded within the past couple of years.
That was such a big problem. It is such a big problem in the Hudson Valley, the Southern Tier, but yeah, that creep north is concerning. We had Capital Region Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara on the program recently. He talked about the state's push for more folks to access broadband and rural areas. Of course, we're in the North Country. It doesn't get much more rural than some of the places up here. You've lived here for a couple decades. What have you seen? What are the problems that folks here are having?
Many of the same problems down there, but much larger areas up here where you just have gaps of very limited or no coverage whatsoever. The program that the governor introduced, yes, has helped in some areas. Just within the past couple of years, some of the phone companies here have taken advantage of the state money. Shazy and Westport Telephone down in Westport, New York, has added 100 miles of fiber optic cable, added about 600 homes just within the past year. They said without that money from the state, it would have taken them 20, 25 years to be able to add that much. But there are pockets.
Yeah.
Keene is another example where they're making progress. They're getting homes on, but
Keene, that's in the High Keene, Peaks area.
Exactly. And for those areas where they're making some progress and taking advantage of the program, there are other areas that are still waiting.
And longtime State Senator Betty Little, this is something that she's been pushing for a long, long time.
In particular, cell phone coverage.
Yes.
And that's another big issue. There's also the task force that the state is putting together now to look into that and the delays in getting cell coverage to more of the Adirondack Park. And for Betty Little, that's been a huge issue for many years. First getting it along the Northway for safety reasons, mm-hmm. now trying to expand it out into the High Peaks area. Her big push is to try to get the APA and others to allow higher cell towers with a bigger coverage area so more areas can have cell service.
A big election coming up here just north of the border. Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister, up for re-election. How is that going, and how is that going to affect folks here south of the border?
Yeah, a lot of people here in northern New York will watch this race closely to see if Justin Trudeau is re-elected as Prime Minister. The trade deal is the thing that comes to mind for a lot of people. It's been negotiated between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, not ratified by Congress or by Parliament yet. So a lot of people wondering if what's going to happen with that. They knew that would hang in the balance during both the Canadian election and most likely potentially the U.S. election as well. So trade is big here. It's a huge part of the economy up here. A lot of manufacturing depends on Canadian companies and going back and forth across the border. So that's probably the number one issue for many people that they're watching.
You say this is neck and neck. I know Justin Trudeau is well known throughout the states, but he's got a close race.
He does, Andrew. Sure, the Conservative Party candidate polls right now, about a week out from the election, are neck and neck. So it raises the prospects that neither party may get a majority and that there could be a minority government where some of the third party candidates would then be in a position where they could negotiate with whoever wins the race.
In our remaining time, what are some of the other issues that you've been focusing on up here in the North Country that we haven't touched on?
Well, like much of the rest of the state, the opioid crisis up here has been huge. A new treatment facility has opened within the past year at a former state youth center. They've been trying for 5 years to get that, 18 beds, that's a major step. Also, former Clinton Community College dorms have been renovated and turned into a campus where recovering addicts can go and live. They can have temporary housing and get services right there. And many people think that's a huge step forward and possibly a model for the rest of the state. And then we were just talking about cross-border issues. One that a lot of us are watching right now is baseball. And
Could it be the return of the Expos, or at least what the Tampa Bay Rays?
That's right. That's what's being talked about now. Major League Baseball has okayed the Tampa Bay Rays playing half of their season in Montreal. They're prepared up there to build a new, beautiful outdoor stadium in downtown Montreal, have the Rays play during the summer up there, and they ultimately would like to get their own team either when the Major League Baseball expands or if another team relocates. But for now, it would be a way to get 40-some games back in Montreal, and if St. Petersburg, Florida signs off on it, they're going to start moving ahead with it.
Color me skeptical. I went to college here in the 90s, and Expos, while they had talent, they just could not get the fannies in the seats.
They couldn't, and that was part of the big problem. The thought now is that Olympic Stadium is gone, it's history. You will now have an open-air stadium, about 30,000 seats, right in the heart of the downtown, and they believe they'll be able to fill those seats.
All right, Tom, we'll have to leave it there. I've always enjoyed our discussions over the years.
I have as well.
You've been a great partner. Thank you.
Matt, thank you.
All right, always great to talk to my friend Tom Halleck from Mountain Lake PBS. Since we taped our segment, which was on Wednesday, some news broke out Thursday morning, Casey, about Elise Stefanik's camp.
North Country Public Radio reported that her campaign made outreach to the rather controversial leader of a group called North Country Deplorables, which is, of course, as you can get from the name, a pro-Trump group that has been instrumental in counter-protests against progressive actions outside her office in Glens Falls. Those protests have become increasingly heated,
yes.
I think it's fair to say, on both sides. The leader of the Deplorables group has taken criticism for pointing a toy gun at one of these recent Glens Falls events at a reporter for the Post Star and making statements that were construed as being controversial. Stefanik's campaign reached out and said, hey, we would really like members of your organization to show up at one of Stefanik's Coffee with Your Congresswoman events, this one that she's having on Friday in Hudson Falls. Her office had a very hard time explaining or failing to explain the details of their outreach or the campaign's outreach to this rather controversial
group. Well, I guess they feel like that's going to be people are going to support her at this town hall meeting, right? We should mention they don't consider themselves to be deplorable people. It's a reference to what Hillary Clinton said during the campaign, that she said that Trump supporters were a host of deplorable people.
Kind of like what I said with Tom when we taped that segment is that I just don't understand the strategy with the Stefanik camp, because she's not some marginal member of Congress. You know, like we talked about, she won by 14 points during the year of the blue wave, but her camp treats it almost like she's in Max Rose's district or Anthony Brindisi, one that could flip either cycle. But that's really not the case.
I think that says something, though. It shows that Republicans are running scared with this impeachment inquiry going on.
All right. Well, now here's a little piece of trivia for you. It was exactly 10 years ago this week that a young Casey Seiler and I partnered up for the first time here on New York Now. Take a look. Today's show marks a new beginning. We're delighted to welcome the Albany Times Union to the New York Now team. Together, we'll be able to better serve the residents of our state by bringing a more comprehensive multimedia news and analysis of state government and public affairs. And joining me right now is Casey Seiler, the state editor of the Albany Times Union. Casey, welcome aboard.
Matt, thanks. It's great to be here. And I know I speak for everybody at the Times Union when I say it's very exciting to be part of New York Now.
Whew. A few more gray hairs on my noggin,
Same
Casey.
Suit. Yes. Still fits.
This is my 486th episode of New York Now, give or take one or two. I kind of lost track
counting. It is also my last. I'm moving on to a new job here in Albany, down at the state controller's office. But I just want to say what a pleasure and honor it's been to be welcomed into your TV sets and laptops for the last decade. And oh boy, what a pleasure it's been to work with these two great journalists and friends.
I just want to say that while I sit here and appear to be a co-equal with you at the desk, I have another job at the Times Union, of course. Mm-hmm. Viewers should know that over the course of the last 10 years, if this show has helped them understand how state government works.
And it has.
Yeah, and if it has been visually interesting, if it has been probing, if it has zigzagged all over the state to bring these stories in, it's because of your work. You are the person who primarily is responsible for this show's success.
Yeah, I totally concur. Matt's been the guiding force on this show. He's the only one who knows how to put it all together, and you will be very greatly missed.
I appreciate that. You're too kind. It's not easy to collaborate with two other entities, two other mediums, print, TV,
so nice.
And radio. That's usually a recipe for a disaster. But we've done this pretty well, and I thank you both for your contributions.
You'll be missed. You're a good friend.
Thank you. And they will stay here, so don't worry. So for one final time, for my friends Casey Seiler and Karen DeWitt, I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching today and all these years, and I hope you keep watching New York Now right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.